At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection, and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
Hey, what up? Welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball. We're going to take a bit of a left turn from some of our basketball storytelling. And don't worry, if you're a Dan Poneman fan, I've had so many texts and tweets and DMs from people. We want more, want to hear part two. We'll drop part two with Dan this upcoming week. But let's get to part one with a good friend of mine. His name is J.C. White. He runs T3 Body. But he's more than a trainer. It's a holistic approach. But what's interesting is, you know, in our search for our zest for like sports and the kind of connection of all sports and the connection of kind of the mind, the body, everything that goes into it. There's also the, hey, I'd love for, if you listen to All Ball, find different ways to have different avenues to make money. And JC was a guy who was a hooper in high school, wasn't good enough to play in college, became all about kind of bodybuilding and weightlifting, and then has turned it into being as successful professionally as anybody in the country. So we'll get to that upcoming. Some quick thoughts on some of the NIL stuff. You know, it's fascinating to see coaches leave. And the assumption is when they step up a level that they bring their best players with them. And what's happened is, and this is with Dusty May, a little bit with Josh Schertz. You look around the country and some of these coaches that have switched jobs, many of them have taken their best player, but it's a little bit harder to get everybody with you. And what happens is when, you know, you have changed places, it allows those players to hit the open market and they're playing the market. And what's interesting about the NIL is space is the phases of it. You know, you had the right when the season was over, a good portion of the players that immediately put themselves in the portal, it was not really their choice. It may have been their choice because they wanted more playing time, but it was not really a lot of times their choice in that the coach was probably thinking, you may want to find yourself somewhere else to play. I can help you out. Put yourself in the portal. Then there's the, you know, guys that have been, we knew were going to be in the portal for a long time and they put their names in and many of them are signing at places. Then you have the list of what you'd call quasi kind of elite players, many of whom are sitting there with a COVID year that they could still use. And oftentimes they're declaring for the NBA draft as kind of a pause. It doesn't put them in the portal because it's still, you know, their current school is still quasi on the hook, but it can put them in the dark portal where, yeah, they can see what their value would be if they were to go to the NBA draft, or they can see what their value would be if they stay in college. And I think there's a good list of those players that we still don't know exactly what their future is. And that's kind of going to determine a lot of the elite stuff, but the money being thrown around is crazy. And I thought Dan's eye-opening podcast was just the start of the story. We'll get more into it upcoming this week. As for the NBA playoffs, you know, I'm intrigued by the Timberwolves and what they did the Suns in game one. The Suns just, you know, your Grayson Allen has to be a lot better, has to be a lot more effective. If you're only going to get handful of points off your bench, your starters have to be playing an elite level. And Kevin Durant was plenty good enough, at least at the offensive end. But they got to figure out how to get other weapons involved. They can't simply attack Rudy Gobert on the perimeter. There has to be other ways in which they can generate offense. Otherwise, could be a short playoff run for the Suns. And you know, with Ibsha as your owner, man, that he's the kind of guy that may get rid of half the team, even though they still really haven't played much together in terms of a big three. Obviously, most people are trying to figure out, what do we do with the Thunder when they get to the playoffs? Feels like they dodged a bit of a bullet with Zion being hurt. Don't get me wrong, the Pels are still talented, but Zion's a completely different dynamic. And we're kind of robbed right now, Zion, assuming that hamstring keeps him out, of seeing what he looks like in playoff basketball against some other guys like we have with the Thunder. And then you have the Lakers and the Nuggets. And look, I knew you brought in a point guard who you thought could challenge D'Angelo Russell, but like, here we are again, and D'Angelo Russell is your starting point guard, and he's just not good enough against the Nuggets. Whether it's his, it's not just his defense, because Jamal Murray didn't light him up. It's, there's not a lot of toughness there rebounding wise. There's just not a lot of 50-50 balls that he gets his hands on. And then, and on some levels, he feels so shook that it affects his offense, and he missed a big layup. Don't get me wrong, he's not the only reason they lost in game one. LeBron James somehow avoiding any sort of negative vibes. He had 7 turnovers in the game. But for the Lakers, if, you know, I just don't understand. The two things I don't understand with the Lakers, I like the things that Rob Pelinka has done for the most part. And, you know, the I don't believe the Westbrook move was his call, but getting rid of Westbrook and reforming the roster was. They did a great job. And I think he knew, you know, he knew that D'Angelo Russell wasn't going to be good enough. But why did you re-sign him? Like, did you re-sign him because, you know, to trade him? I never loved that idea. And you're a little snake bit, right? Like, you go and get a point guard who starts for Miami last year and they go to the finals and he essentially never plays for you. So that, you know, maybe you had to know better, but there's also a part of it to which it's just unlucky. But the two things I don't understand with the Lakers is why they brought back D'Angelo Russell and why they didn't draft Jaime Jaquez. And look, plenty of other teams didn't draft Jaime Jaquez, but let's be honest, if you're the Lakers and he's in your backyard, kid's just a stud. He checks every box and he helps you off the floor with Hispanic demographic. Not that that's why you would draft him, but he's just a kind of a perfect fit. And you're in win now mode. You draft a player who's 19. He's not going to help you for a couple of years, as opposed to Hawkins draft you now. So those are the two that jump out to me. And I think both of those are kind of coming back to roost for him. All right, more hoop talk upcoming. Let's dig in. This is my friend JC White. T3 Body is his company. Here's his story.
Before we get to who you are now, what's your sports background, JC? What were you like as an athlete in high school?
Yeah, I played basketball pretty much my whole life. I was all state, first team all league. I was a decent hooper, but the muscle and the more of the athleticism came a little bit after high school.
Okay, wait, so like what high school?
I went to Andover in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan.
Okay. Where is that? That's outside, that's a suburb of Detroit, correct?
Yeah, it's about 30 minutes outside of Detroit, heading towards Lansing.
Okay. What year were you all state?
2007 was the year that I was all state.
Okay. And point guard, two guard, like you're a big dude. You're not a big dude. What was your position of choice?
Yeah. So I played like 1 through 4. Cause I was, I could leap back in the day. Like my vertical was like 40 inches. So I could get up there. So being about 6'1", they had me play anywhere from the 1 through 4. So I was kind of like a flex. And it was tough, man. Sometimes I had to guard some of the guys that were like 6'6", 6'7", and trying to,
There's nothing fun about that. There's nothing fun about guard picking. my advice on post defense is foul. I don't want to guard you. That's what they teach you when you play professionally. It's just like, hey, you get caught in a bad mismatch, just like foul, you get 5 more.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. Just don't get caught in that position again.
I would just try to bait them into taking a try to use their height so I could at least leap to try to contest the shot. But if they were smart and they just hit me with like a hook or, you know, just lowered their shoulder a little bit and used their offhand to shoot, there's not much I could do about that.
Now, didn't you go into bodybuilding like right after high school?
I got into it in college. I started training like pretty serious around like 19, 20 years old. And then I turned pro at 22, which made me the second youngest person to do so.
Okay, so wait, so let's go back. You, where'd you go to college?
Michigan State.
Okay, so you go to Michigan State. This is in the peak of the early Izzo era, right?
Yep.
How did you find a love for bodybuilding, weightlifting? Like, where'd that come from?
Yeah, so after I got done playing basketball, you know, I think as athletes, we always have this need to express, you know, some type of physical demand of the body. We're used to pushing ourselves. We're used to challenging ourselves. And I no longer had that because I didn't play basketball at the next level. And so I kind of just stumbled into the gym one day and I used to hate it. I used to think it sucked. I used to be really weak, not that strong. And I just kind of like just did a circuit around the gym and for whatever.
So this is like the student center, Michigan State, or is this back home in Bloomfield? Like where is it when you first started kind of your weightlifting journey?
Yeah, so this was actually my freshman year, which I did my first year at Western Michigan before I transferred to Michigan State. So
Kalamazoo.
Yeah, Kalamazoo. Yep. This was 2008. So this is when they had like Greg Jennings. I'm not sure he played for the Green Bay Packers for a little bit.
Sure.
Around that time, the football team was decent. But anyway, I kind of stumbled my way in there and just did like just worked out for like 3 hours. And didn't really have a plan or direction at that time, but it seemed to help me feel better because I was kind of sad about not playing ball anymore. And then it just kind of spiraled into what it is today.
Cool. Let's get to that spiral. Okay. So you start working out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And all of a sudden your body starts changing, right? You're like 19, like everybody starts to get those band muscles. Okay. How did you take it from there to getting into becoming a pro bodybuilder? Like what was the progression like?
Yeah. So I remember I was, you know, I gained that freshman 15 originally. Right. So like, you know, you go off to school, you're the first time away from home. You're eating like, you know, can we curse at all? Or is this, we got to keep it really restrictive.
No, of course you can curse, dude. Okay.
So I was eating like shit, drinking pretty much Thirsty Thursdays all the way till, you know, Sunday. You know, that 15 kind of popped on me quick. So first it was just, okay, I just want to look like how I did in high school. You know, I always pretty much had abs or a six pack, you know, being an athlete my entire life. And it was just getting back to that basis. Well, then because I actually started to enjoy the process, I started learning more about nutrition and started learning more about supplementation and how much actually goes into that whole entire process of getting on stage and competing and getting more muscular, getting stronger. It actually really started to fascinate me. And so I started to question like, okay, what's the next progressive step to this if I actually wanted to compete in some aspect, whether it be Olympic lifting, powerlifting, or bodybuilding competitions? And that's where I started to explore, like, you know, fitness modeling was like the first thing I got into. So I was like, okay, cool. It was a show out in Las Vegas. It was a search for a muscle and fitness male model kind of like cover, like they were like going to do like thousands of guys. And that was the first thing that I ever stepped into. Didn't do so well, but it introduced me to the whole industry.
Was there a like a friend? Like, I mean, how do you discover all this stuff on your own in Michigan? Like, how do you, you know, was there somebody who's like, here's my guy and he told me all this stuff? How do you go from, hey, I'm just kind of interested in it, start working on my body, to now I'm going out to a show in Vegas?
Yeah, that's the funny part, man. And I wish I had a coach back then, but this was the early days of YouTube. Like when YouTube was first getting on the scene, like the late, you know, 2000s to 2010, around that time period. So I'm not sure if you remember, but like Ronnie Coleman, Jay Cutler, they were putting out like these video like vlogs and then prepping for competitions, like the Mr. Olympia competitions. And I essentially, when I first got into it, was just mimicking everything that I saw them do. This is kind of like what I did in basketball too, as well. Like, cause I, you know, I didn't really have a whole lot of one-on-one instructions, but if I saw somebody execute something or they'd be like, you know, how are they coming off the pick and roll or like their footwork or something like that, I would immediately go and try it and do it and try to do it for myself. So bodybuilding was kind of like the same thing, where it was seeing them, how they prepped their food, the daily, like the lifestyle, how they were training, and just kind of just following that. Was it the most optimal or best approach? No, but it was a good kind of like framework for me to start with, because the most important thing in being successful with any endeavor, but definitely with this, is just the consistency of the effort. So that's what really paid off more than anything, was just being consistent. And that's like kind of how I prepped for my first show.
Okay. What about supplementation? What was that like back then in terms of what you're, not just food, but like what you're actually taking in your body?
Yeah. So back then it was just all pseudoscience. Like I was taking like, I don't want to, you know, beat up on any other companies back then, but it was just all like pseudoscience is bro science, you know, like it was stuff that wasn't going to actually truly have any impactful change on your body for the price point at which you were purchasing at. So it was just like overhyped, overmarketed products. Add 15 pounds of muscle in 30 days and stuff like that, like it would say. But it, you know, realistically, it was just really heavily inflated creatine products or stuff that really didn't do any that good. So like it wasn't anything crazy back then. And at the time, I didn't want to flirt around with any of like the performance enhancing drugs. Not only that, I did not have access to it because I was a college kid in Michigan. Like that stuff's not easy to come by. Two, inherently, I knew I was really young still and my body hadn't fully developed yet. So I wanted to give it enough time to see where I can get without having to use any like help. Because I didn't want to stop myself.
Can you legit compete though, Natty, if you would? Like, it's like, dude, I got no shot here.
Yeah, I didn't know that people. So this is kind of like fast forwarding to the future. So I did a few more shows and then finally I put it all together. I got way more scientific with the process, actually had some help, got a coach and everything like that. And I did not turn pro at 22. I didn't actually find out that everybody was using though until my first pro show. That was like the rudest awakening. I was not only the youngest guy on stage, the guy who actually won that pro show was about 15 years older than me. But they all were using not just one or two steroids, but like eight or nine was a part of their protocols and prepping for shows. And I was only 23, I believe, 23 or 20. Yeah, 23 when I did my first pro show. So the guy who won it was like 37 or 38 or something like that. So like that was when I had like my rude awakening. And I was like, not only am I these guys have decades of me of training, but they're also using a fuck ton of drugs. So if I was going to have to compete at that level with those guys, either one or two things, I was going to give it more time, let my body develop. Cause like, you know, genetically I could keep up with a lot of people. So like if I just gave myself more time, I would be able to compete at a high level. Or two, I was going to have to hop on. Number two was kind of out of the option, still way too young. So it was just train more, train smarter and give it more time.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279. Or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
Okay, so then take me through the progression. So you make this decision. Okay, I can't get on that train. I'm not ready for that. Then what?
Yeah, so at that point, it was how can I compete at a high level, but not compromise, for one, my integrity, like what I'm not willing to do yet, and still have fun with the process. So then that's when I transitioned and got into powerlifting. Oddly enough, the highest level of bodybuilding, you have to use. It's all steroids, like the drug tested competitions, nobody gives a fuck about. Like, and for the most part, the physiques aren't that impressive, because usually the guys who are really, you know, genetically blessed all end up getting gear at some point. So they all end up, you know, competing with everybody else who is using it. But powerlifting, the highest, best sanctioned, you know, competitions are actually all drug tested. And then when you compete at a high level there, they actually do random drug tests throughout the year. So actually I was drug tested, I think like 2 or 3 times while powerlifting. So that's when I was a transition there. So I was like, okay, let me put bodybuilding on the back burner for right now. I'll circle back to this maybe at a later date. Let me go ahead and compete in powerlifting. For one, two, it's objective. It reminds me of playing a sport. So like, you know, bodybuilding is subjective. Yeah, they have like a grading criteria and kind of like a score. But at the end of the day, you know, the beauty is in the eye of the beholder, so to speak. So like the judges are ultimately going to decide what they're looking for. They might want more size on that day, but they might want more shape. They might want more symmetry. So that's kind of like the challenging part about bodybuilding. But powerlifting is like, did you just lift more than the man next to you? Fucking love that. It's unarguable. And plus it's just really fucking strong. Like, it's really fucking fun to be strong. I think as a man, I think we all, you know, admired really strong masculine men when we were growing up, at least, you know, my generation and before. I don't know about the kids today, but
I think it's still today. I actually think that probably might even matter more now, you know, because they have, like, you go to college campuses, and I do think, like, you go to the workout gyms or whatever, and kids are more into their body. Like, I remember when I played in college, obviously, before, when you were probably, like, in middle school. Mm-hmm. I finished up in 2000. But, you know, when I was coming up, I had my trainer was a guy, Marv Marinovich. Marv's son. Marv was the former strength coach of the Rams, played in the NFL himself. And you know, Todd, of course, his son was a first round draft pick, and he was seen by people who didn't know him as, you know, kind of a, like, seen as like some sort of lunatic. Any of us who worked with him were like, he was a genius, but we were way ahead with diet. And, you know, he was big on the zone diet, 40-30-30, mm-hmm. and some supplementation. But it was a lot more from like a chemistry sort of background, right? Like that was how he went about it. But the point is, when I was in college, like, I was literally the only guy on my team to really, really worry about what I was eating. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, even at my school, there wasn't anybody who would go in there. You felt like was really worried about kind of what they were eating, how they were lifting, all the things that athletes did. Whereas now I think you go, and I think that's changed. I again, it's still more niche-y, but, you know, like, frat boys are a lot more into looking good and being cut and getting big than they used to be, just about kind of like drinking beer or whatever. I think I think fitness is a lot more part of, you know, my own daughter's going to college next year. And, you know, again, she's not a bodybuilder, but she's taking spin class. And like, who did that? None of the girls did that when I was in high school, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that part is interesting. But, okay, so when you're doing powerlifting, mm-hmm. Okay, here's the first question I think most people want to know, but they fail to ask or are afraid to ask. Mm-hmm. Are bodybuilders actually strong, or is there just an art to making your body look strong?
Are bodybuilders strong? Fuck no. Fuck no. That's one of the things that I've hated about it, is like, these guys would be monsters, right? Absolutely huge muscles bursting through the shirt. But when you get them in the gym, you can out, like, a really good athlete who's trained correctly can kick their ass in the gym. Like, it's strictly just for cosmetics. So the one thing that I always wanted to be was kind of like a dual athlete, where not only look the part, but I could move very well. I was also very strong. My body was also very mobile.
Yeah, you want to be like, so like stiff, like big, huge neck bodybuilder, can't move. What's up, bro? What's up? You know,
yeah.
We know the guy. We all know the guy.
Yeah, like, and that's not that was never appealing to me. Like, I was always a bigger fan of the bodybuilding in the classic era, like with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Serge Nabre. Like, those physiques to me always looked very very balanced, very proportionate, but also very athletic too at the same time. Like, they looked like they could still go out and run like a 40-yard dash. They looked like, you know, if you got in a scrap with them, and that would not be a good time. The bodybuilders today, I mean, they're so big and immobile. Like, it's just it's impressive the size that they put on, but it's not something that I think a lot of people would want to look like. But to your point, you said something earlier about you know, the kids today, like them, you know, be going to the gym. I think that actually might be that people are just more health conscious today.
Yeah.
I think that's more of the trend. But the reason why, like, I got into it, like, I just admired, like, masculinity and being strong and being powerful. Like, that to me was like the appeal. Whereas I think today, I think people may do it for more of a visual reason. Like, they want to look cool. They want to look sick. The people are definitely way more health conscious today, even though America as a whole is fatter than it's ever been. But for me, it was like growing up, my heroes were always, it was like Arnold Schwarzenegger, pro wrestlers, like superheroes. Like, that to me was like the appeal. So that's why it was cool to be strong and lift like these enormous weights, because it was being like my idols. It was like the guys that I wanted to be like.
Well, that stuff is so, I think back, it's funny. That's why I lifted. I didn't lift for the cosmetic. I liked the way it looked. Mm-hmm. But I really liked the idea of feeling strong, because I was such a late bloomer. I was always so skinny, you know, and so little. And I love the idea of delivering punishment when I play basketball. You know, probably ruin my jump shot a little bit, because you can lift and be strong and still shoot, but you have to be really vigilant about it. And a lot of my shooting stuff was mental. But I love just the feeling of being, you know, of contact not bothering you. Mm-hmm. And the feeling of, you know, we could hand check back then, and like, you put your hand on somebody, and if you're really strong, you can make it feel like a fucking vice grip on somebody's hip. And you know what no one really says about hand checking is, like, I can steer you, I can control you, whereas if I can't touch you, I can't control, I can't steer you. And it was a very valuable part of how I played. And so I'm with you. I get that, the masculinity and the feeling of raw strength. So you transitioned to powerlifting. Mm-hmm. How long did it take to when you were really at the top and competing?
Not too long. I mean, within, I think, like 6 months, I was one of the top ranked guys in the country in powerlifting.
Is deadlift or squat, clean and jerk? What do you lift when you're doing powerlifting?
Yeah, so powerlifting is bench press, squat, and deadlift. You get 3 attempts at each lift. Usually, if you do it correctly, your third attempt is going to be your highest, and they add up the total of all those lifts, and that's how you actually win. Is you take the 3 lifts and you get the cumulative total. So it's ultimate, just kind of like broing out. Like, who
let me tell you what this is like. You're going to think this is a weird thing. Okay, this is, my daughter is a show jumper. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, she's going to college and she has to learn a different discipline called equitation, but she's a show jumper. And what show jumping is a lot like what you're describing, right? Because you have hunter jumper, you have equitation, dressage is something totally different. You have all these things where they're grading and scoring things. And show jumping is just go as fast as you can and don't hit any rails, right? That's basically, is there an art to it? Like, yes, there absolutely is. But it's go as fast as you can and don't hit any rails. And what you're saying is that's what powerlifting is. Like, it takes all the judgments, like, just lift in 3 different disciplines, just lift as much weight as you can.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Like, how much of a subculture, how popular is powerlifting in comparison? Because we don't hear anything about powerlifting. We do about bodybuilding.
Yeah.
How popular is powerlifting internationally?
It's actually very big international. So powerlifting has, I'm not sure if it's still the same, but they have where you have your local competitions, then you have your state level competitions, then you have your national, then you have your international. international, I think that they take the best lifters from every single country, and they all go compete, and they basically just who has the biggest total. Now that powerlifting used to be in the Olympics. It used to be actually an Olympic. Now it's in Olympic Games, but it used to be in the Olympics. I believe there was some drug testing controversy because the Olympics are very strict. So guys were getting caught. They were getting popped for using, and then they just ended up banning it. But now, as far as like culture in the United States, bodybuilding is obviously bigger. It's just more of a freak show. And I think the entertainment value of watching a bodybuilding competition is much easier. It's only going to be like an hour or two. Powerlifting, that, like some of those meets, man, those things can be like 5 or 6 hours long. And it never really put like the production value into it. So you have to be really into the sport to actually like watch and consume the content. But every time like, a massive lift happens, it goes everywhere. Like goes viral on Bleacher Report, ESPN, all that kind of stuff.
No question. Okay, so what are you eating? What is the diet of a powerlifter like?
It's called a seafood diet. So everything you see, you eat. you do have to gain weight. So like a bigger guy has more leverage. He's going to lift more weight. So it's encouraging for you to, especially if you're at the bottom end of your weight class, to just eat more to get to the top end of it. So it's not as strict and as rigid as like a bodybuilding diet. That's wildly different. But powerlifting diet, essentially you're trying to get plenty of protein, lots of carbohydrates, lots of carbs, and a little bit more fat than what you would traditionally get on a bodybuilding diet. And you get a lot more cheat meals. Like I would say like a powerlifting diet, when done correctly, you probably eat like 2 to 3 cheat meals per week. So you're always in a caloric surplus. You're not really suffering. So you feel very good going into competition.
The common perception is eat whatever you want. You just eat a ton of food and a lot of protein and you're taking all those drugs anyway. So all that fat burns off. And you have these gains. What's the reality to what's a bodybuilding diet?
Yeah. So bodybuilding, this is the common misconception of bodybuilding. Bodybuilding is 90% genetics. 90% genetics. You can give a Joe Smo off the street every single steroid under the sun and pump him to the gills, but he probably won't even win a local competition because it's 90. It's kind of like there's a reason why LeBron James is LeBron James. He's 6'9", 250. At his best ran, I think like a 4.440 and has like a 40 plus inch vertical, whatever he has. Like you that's just what his makeup is. Same thing with guys in bodybuilding. The top guys that are always going to compete at a high level are it's genetics. But then after that, yeah, the drugs are a big part of it because you have to take that in order to enhance what you already have. That's all it's going to do. But the diet is really the thing that separates people. When I nailed down the diet when I was in my early 20s, that felt like getting on like anabolics. Like that was the hugest thing.
Okay, so you wake up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Wake up in the morning. Give me this is your bodybuilding.
Yep.
Okay. You wake up in the morning, what time?
Yep. So wake up in the morning, 8 egg whites, 2 whole eggs, 2 slices of Ezekiel bread. About a cup of oatmeal and maybe like a little bit of like blueberry sprinkled on top of that. That would be the breakfast. You're coming back about 2 to 4 hours later, usually about 4 hours later, and you're having 8 to 10 ounces of chicken breast with like a sweet potato and then like a side of vegetables. Then repeat that for meal 3. After you get done with training, protein shake, about 50 grams of protein. And then for the last meal of the day is either going to be like salmon or steak with a rice and a vegetable. So all in all, that's pretty much like what the meals look like. That's what my diet looked like getting ready for a competition. And I'll have one day per week where those meals with the protein sources would stay the same, but the carbohydrates would double. So the carbs would be called a refeed day. Carbs would go like twice as much. And yeah, you have to do that for about 12, 20 weeks at a time.
Why do you load up on the carbs one day a week?
Yeah, the science behind the theory really about the refeed day is that it helps to stimulate more fat burning hormones. And also it's going to help to replenish glycogen stores. So that's like where the store carbohydrates are with inside of the muscles. So like when you get lean, you don't have that stringy look. Your muscles are pumped, they're round, they're full, they're vascular. You want to kind of, when you're dieting, you think of it like landing in an airplane. If you come down too fast, it's going to crash. You're going to look like shit on stage. But But if you come down nice and slow and you're really, you know, moderating everything, you're gonna look even bigger than you were 20, 30 or 40 pounds ago. That's how you diet correctly. You should look bigger as you come down.
Wow. That sounds crazy expensive, by the way, to eat that much.
It's actually not. You know, when you buy in bulk and you buy boring food like chicken, steak, rice, salmon, it's actually really relatively inexpensive. I remember in college, I was able to, you know, because that's when I turned pro. I was eating, my weekly budget for groceries was anywhere between 80 and 120 bucks. Really, really cheap. So for, especially for consuming that much food, it's just like when you get into the middle of the store in a grocery store, that's where stuff gets expensive because you're not getting a whole lot of value out of the servings that they're actually giving you. But when you're buying like 5 pounds of chicken breasts, bro, that was like I remember it was like $8, $9 when I was in college for 5 pounds. It's a lot of food, you know, and then a bag of rice. What is a bag of rice? Bag of rice was like $3, $4, $5 for like a huge bag of rice that could last you for 2-3 weeks. Really cheap.
Why'd you stop powerlifting?
Ah, yeah. No money in it. You know, it like I was so I remember Raw Nationals, which is the national level powerlifting competition. I believe it was 2017. I was watching it. There was a guy there that squatted 1,000 pounds and went everywhere. It was on all across social media. Couldn't get it off my feed. Multiple people took the image of him doing that and used it to sell, you know, equipment, different gear, apparel, whatever it was. And the amount of money that that guy got from that was $0. Because the federation makes you sign over the rights to any type of media that is taken while you're in competition, and they own it. So they could sell stuff for your likeness or whatever cool things that you do while you're like whatever awesome feats of strength you do on stage. They could sell that, but you don't get any return on it. So when I saw that, I was just like, yeah, this is kind of like, I love the sport. I love the challenge of it. I love competing. But if I'm going to dedicate my body and my energy and my mind for then that much like time to something, it's got to be an ROI positive activity. So happy that I did it. Like, I love it. I learned so much from it. That's helped me in many different ways, but it just didn't make sense economically, like, to do something like that. Cause essentially you're a pro athlete, but you're not getting paid like one.
That is therein lies the rub. Therein definitely lies the rub. So how'd you decide to make money?
Yeah. So during this time period, I'd actually gotten to what I'm doing now, in my early 20s when I started coaching people. And that for me was a really fulfilling journey because it was essentially me being able to do the same thing for others of which I'd done for myself through the process. Because yeah, while be it a lot of the stuff that goes on with a transformation is physical, like that's what people see on the outside, but the most rewarding thing is actually what happens mentally. And I, you know, a lot of people and in the industry as a whole tends to miss that. It's really just focus on the visual aspect of things, which I think it can be quite shallow, but I marry the two. So I focus on the mindset and the physical side of things. So that's what I started doing in my early 20s. It really took off after I turned pro. Then I moved out to Los Angeles, and that's where things really, really shot off. And then got into what I'm doing now with T3. So, that's how I make my living. I'm very fortunate, make a really good living doing so. And it's very, very fulfilling and very rewarding for me.
Well, so what you do that's different than other people is when it's not just about working out, right? It's like a holistic approach, right? There's a mental aspect of it, which with reading, as well as your diet, as well as your workouts. How did you become aware that the mental aspect was such a huge element to it?
Because that was the thing that enabled me to reach my highest potential when I was a young man. was not being mentally aligned and in harmony with the things that I wanted in life. And the reason why I wasn't, because there was a lot of shortcomings and a lot of inadequacies, which I had within myself. So in order to actually get and acquire those things I wanted in a lot of life, first I had to work on those inadequacies in my shortcomings and get in harmony with those things. And then it's just, it's not if you're going to get it, it's just when it pulls it towards you. You're more attractive. You're like, it attracts towards you. So that's where I did that, because ultimately I got into the sport of bodybuilding because I was depressed and because I didn't feel so great about myself. So I use it as a tool to help build myself back up. And then from there it was, okay, what was the reason why I did not get to the next level of basketball? Because I wanted to be a professional basketball player. Like, that was my dream growing up as a kid. And yeah, you can probably say like, you know, I'm not 6'6" or whatever and all this kind of stuff. But to me, that's kind of like, it's kicking the blame off. And I don't think winners do that. I don't think you get very far in doing that. But I had come to found, it was a shortcoming in my mentality. It was a shortcoming in me not assessing my weaknesses and working on them. And it was a shortcoming in my work ethic. So those are things that I took now today. And I'm like, okay, never again will I ever be in that position where if I have an opportunity to maximize on my potential on something, then I'm going to fall short of that. So yeah, that's kind of like how I got to that whole thing is, you know, people want things out of life, whether it be more money, more muscles, better relationships, more mental and cognitive strength, whatever it may be. And first we must look inside to see, okay, where are my shortcomings? Like, what are the things I need to work on to actually get these things? And am I in harmony with those things? If you're in harmony with it, it's going to come to you.
What are the challenges of kind of this era? Obviously, like, look, there's some really good challenges, right? COVID, I think, provided a lot more where, you know, doing online coaching became very, very normal. People started to work out more at home. On the other hand, as you pointed out, like, people's mentalities have changed, and there's, you know, some approaches don't work anymore. What are the inherent challenges of doing this in 2000, doing what you do in 2024?
That's a good question. There's no challenges I could really think of off the bat that really come to, because I think that the way at least that question is coming across to me is like, what limitations are there? And I don't really
see. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really
see. Like all of our jobs. And again, maybe all of our jobs have changed in mm-hmm. the last couple of years, right? Some for the better, some for the worse. Mm-hmm. You know, like, again, for you, like, you and I, we're doing this on Zoom. Who did this stuff on Zoom before COVID? Right? I'm sure it existed. Nobody knew. And it definitely wasn't a fallback. I'm just wondering what's changed in this coaching industry, for better or for worse, in the past couple of years.
Ah, okay. So like the industry as a whole,
or for you and your business.
Yeah. Yeah. So for me, I think the business evolved because I evolved. When I was in Los Angeles and I was working with people like one-on-one, like a very few select elite group of people, the thing that I found that actually made them successful when it came to fitness was these interactions. It wasn't actually the X's and O's of the training. Because like if so, for instance, if somebody's mental shit is not all together, if their life is in scrambles to like their emotional life, their relationship life and everything like that, and they don't have a really good self-image, that's a lot of shit I just threw at you. But like let's just say like all those things exist, right? There's no fucking way they're going to stick to a diet and a training program, even if a trainer comes and pulls their ass out of bed, forces them to go do the gym, forces them to do the reps. They're going to fucking fail. So the thing that has to be fixed is their fucking life entirely. So the thing that I found was like, okay, cool. We got to build up your self-image first. Your self-image is how you see yourself. Do you love yourself? Do you like yourself? Because if you really do, and that's fucking true, you're not lying to yourself about it, you're going to treat yourself like somebody that you love. So like, for instance, Doug, would you do something amazing for your daughters? Like, would you give them the world? Would you make sure that they have a safe home? Would you make sure they have food at the table? Absolutely. Because why? You love them, right? So when somebody is out of shape, treating their body like shit, not going to the gym, not working out, that is a sign of a lack of self-love. You don't love yourself enough. I don't give a fuck how many Rolexes you put on your fucking wrist. I don't care about what the car you drive in your driveway. Doesn't mean shit. Like it's a compensation. So we have to actually go down to the root cause of why is there a lack of self-love? We have to fix that. We have to have those tough conversations with ourselves. And once that gets fixed, then it's a lot easier to give yourself the best of things in life. So when I was doing like all those transformations and changing people's lives as one-on-one person, I was like, yeah, like giving you all the shit, the diet, all that kind of, yeah, that matters, but it's not the most important thing. The most important thing is fixing this up here. Once that gets fixed, it's like light speed to your goals because that internal friction isn't there anymore. You stop getting in your own fucking way. You stop making excuses because you're like, I actually want to give myself a great fucking body because I deserve this shit. I actually want to give myself the easy fucking life that's amazing because I deserve this shit. A lot of our problems, we fucking cause them. We cause them. It's not the world. So we have to fix ourselves. We want our problems to go away as opposed to blaming everybody else.
I want to do a part two upcoming, but I got to cut it right now at part one. If somebody wants to get a hold of you, if mm-hmm. somebody wants to begin the process of fixing their shit, mm-hmm. how do they do it?
Yeah, the easiest way to get in contact with me is on Instagram, Coach JC White, or they can go to t3bodytraining.com. But the easiest way is to hit me there, inbox me. We'll have a conversation back and forth, and then we'll hop on a call and we'll see if I can even help. You know, I like to, you know, we like to go through a process with anybody who's interested to make sure that we actually can help them and they're a good fit. And if they are, then we'll get rocking and rolling.
Okay, here's what I want. Here's your homework project for the next time, because you always give me homework, right? Mm-hmm. Homework project is, okay, for a young athlete, okay, how can you start the process of, like you said, it's like self-love, but also understanding how to kind of change your diet, change your body at a younger age. How do we do that? What would, if you were to advise, you're a coach, which you are, but like a basketball coach or a football coach to advise a young athlete, how do you get through to them and how do you start to change what they eat and how they mentally see themselves? That's your homework project. And then we'll get to that next time. Is that cool?
Yeah, for sure. So essentially, let's just do a case study. So we got a 15-year-old kid. He plays yep. football or basketball, and he is not great. How do we get him to start to get on a diet and take that more seriously so that he can get to the next level?
Correct.
Cool. All right, cool. Yeah. I got the answers, but I'll save it for next time.
I know you do. All right. We'll talk soon, all right?
All right. Sounds good, brother.
See ya.
All right. That's part one of JC White. What we're going to do is we'll work in part two upcoming, which is more kind of putting together a plan. And especially with spring and summer upon us, it's a pretty good way to have just kind of a rough plan. And I think most people believe they know, you know, how to change their body and how to change their mentality, but actually doing it, executing it, and how to think through it. We'll get to that in part two with JC White. In the meantime, I'm Doug Gottlieb, and make sure you download the Doug Gottlieb Show daily podcast. It's a radio show and a one-hour podcast. Just type in Doug Gottlieb. If you got this one, you could probably get it as well. In the meantime, thanks so much to JC. Dan Poneman, part two is coming up. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.